What's up, guys, and welcome back to Bookworm Corner. For Studio 3532, I'm Luke. Now, if you're a returning listener, I want to thank you, and I hope you keep coming back for every new episode I'm able to put out for you guys. If you're a new listener, thank you. I'm glad you're here. I hope you enjoy. I hope you check out the older episodes and enjoy them too. Now, a word of warning, in this season of the podcast, while I'm reviewing these books, there will be spoilers because I don't just review them, I do a plot summary and a more in-depth synopsis which hits all the major plot points and plot twists. Now, let's go ahead and get into it. In the second episode of Bookworm Corner, I will be discussing Percy Jackson and the Sea of Monsters. Now, in this adventure, Percy Jackson and his friends face a few challenges. Now, the tree that provides the magical protection barrier around Camp Half-Blood has begun to weaken and to fail, meaning that monsters are starting to be able to get into the camp and attack them. Now, Percy and his friends must go on a quest to find the only thing powerful enough to save it and the camp before they are overrun with monsters. Along the way, Percy will have to embark on a daring rescue to save his best friend Grover if they're going to be able to save the camp, and they'll need to band together with him and a few other people in order to face the challenges head on and save what they care about. Now, get ready for the Sea of Monsters. Now, this book starts off at the end of Percy's 7th grade year. It's been a pretty good school year and pretty uneventful too, which is very unusual for him, as we know. Now, at this point in the year, at the end, he's befriended a homeless kid named Tyson who is able to go to the school because the school is trying to look good for, you know, PR and all that, and kind of has adopted him as a community service project, which is pretty sad when you think about it. But anyway, that's how we meet Tyson. Now, the last day of school is ruined when, during PE, a group of cannibalistic giants attack him and Percy during a game of dodgeball, which turns out to be a game to the death. Now, Percy is saved from these giants by the combined efforts of Tyson and from his friend Annabeth, who we met the last time, who is also a demigod, and she shows up in time to help him escape. Now, the trio head back to Camp Half-Blood together and arrive just in time to see that the other campers there are engaged in a fight with two giant mechanical fire-breathing bulls. Now, they join in the fight, but it looks like they're not going to be able to make it until, at the last possible second, Tyson shows up. Well, not shows up, he was there. Anyway, Tyson is able to save Percy and the camp and single-handedly destroys both of the bulls. It is revealed as this unfolds that Tyson is, in fact, not just some kid, he's a Cyclops, which makes him immune to fire and very strong, which is how he's able to defeat those bulls, but also making him Percy's half-brother. And you thought your family tree was weird. Once everything has settled down and they're back inside the camp, we learn that the magical border which protects the camp has been weakened since someone poisoned Talia's tree, which is the source of its power. Now, Chiron, the camp's head counselor, who, if you remember before, was Mr. Bruner and helped Percy get to camp in the first place, has been accused of poisoning it and has been fired since he is the son of Kronos, who is the mortal enemy of the gods. Now, Talia is the daughter of Zeus, who was turned into this tree which guards the camp by her father after she was mortally wounded and almost died while protecting her friends while they were all trying to get to camp when they were younger. Her two friends that were with her were Luke and Annabeth, and the only reason they survived was because of her sacrifice. Now, Percy suggests, based on a dream he received from his best friend Grover, who we learn has gone missing, that the Golden Fleece, a powerful magical object, is the only thing that will be able to save the tree and to protect the camp. Now, since Chiron's been fired, Tantalus is chosen to be the new head counselor and begins doing his best to make sure camp is absolutely miserable for Percy. And he instates a bunch of new rules and makes a bunch of changes that just don't work out well for our hero. Now, after Clarice, who is a daughter of Ares, and is kind of the camp bully, wins a chariot race, Tantalus finally decides to agree that a quest is indeed needed in order to retrieve the fleece, and sends her to find it, even though it was Percy's dream that led to this information. Now, to make matters worse, he made a rule that anyone who leaves the camp without permission will face expulsion from the camp forever, meaning their only safe place as demigods will be lost to them. Now, the god Hermes comes to Percy one night and encourages him to sneak out against the rules and to find the fleece and go against what Tantalus has said. Now, Percy realizes this is their only chance to save the camp, and so one night he, Annabeth, and Tyson set off on a quest of their own with a bit of help from Poseidon to find the fleece and to rescue Grover. Now, the trio reaches a cruise ship that they find to be heading in the right direction for their quest and board it, only to find out that it is full of monsters and demigods who have aligned themselves with the evil leader of the Titans, the mortal enemy of the god, as I said before, Kronos. Now, they are captured by Luke, who, if you remember from before, betrayed them all last summer, and they learn that he is leading in efforts to try and revive the Titan Lord. The trio manage to escape being killed by him in a lifeboat from that ship and find shelter in an old hideout of Annabeth's from when she was younger and on the run from monsters while trying to reach camp. Later, they're sailing on their quest and are attacked by a Hydra, but fortunately they're saved by the arrival of Clarice and her questing party, and they join her on her ship and her quest. Now, her ship is the CSS Birmingham, which is a Civil War ship that's been outfitted to attack monsters and is manned by a crew of zombie sailors. Now, they sail on and reach the Sea of Monsters, which we learn is disguised to the mortals as the Bermuda Triangle, where they're supposed to find the Fleece and Grover. Now, in order to get into the Sea of Monsters, they'll have to successfully sail past either of two monsters from the Tales of Homer. First, there's Charybdis, which is a monster that creates a massive whirlpool to pull down and destroy ships. And the second choice is Scylla, a massive hawk-like monster that swoops down and ends up destroying their ship. Now, it appears that Tyson and Clarice are killed, so Percy and Annabeth head on to the closest island they can find on a lifeboat from their ship. Now, this island turns out to be not as safe as they thought, as it is the home of the Queen Witch Circe. They manage to escape her island on the Queen Anne's Revenge, which, that's a little history nugget for you if you remember, is the ship of none other than Blackbeard himself, and they continue sailing on towards their goal. So they finally reached their goal after all of this, which was the island of Polyphemus, the massive cyclops that has been holding Grover captive. They also learn once they get to the island that Tyson and Clarice are alive and are in fact with Grover. They also find out that Grover has the fleece, but is not able to escape. So, after they finally manage to defeat Polyphemus, the group returns to the mainland, now in possession of the fleece. Clarice heads back and catches a flight to get to camp in time to save the tree, while the trio and Grover head back along the ground, taking a little bit more time, but they used up their money and resources to get Clarice back in time. Now, on their way back, Luke yet again captures them and is planning to kill them. Now, while they're captured, Percy manages to trick Luke into admitting he poisoned the tree while an iris message was being sent back to the camp's director. Now, an iris message is basically magical Skype. So anyway, this clears Chiron's name and gets him reinstated as the camp's head counselor. And once Luke realizes that he's been tricked, he challenges Percy to a duel, but easily beats him because He's one of the greatest sword fighters in the world at this point, and nearly kills Percy. He's about to deal the final blow, but before he's able to, Chiron shows up and rushes the group back to camp, where Clarice has just put the fleece on Talia's tree, and it begins to do its work. Now, the fleece definitely works. It works better than anyone expected. The next morning, Talia is found sleeping outside the tree and wakes up to the commotion of the border guards finding her, and she's found to be fully healed. Now, the return of Talia and the addition of her to our cast of characters gives Kronos another demigod to try and manipulate into helping him and into fulfilling the great prophecy his way, which up to this point, the only person who could even have a role in this prophecy was Percy. And this prophecy states that either the demigod it's about will either save or destroy Olympus and the gods. Now, up until the very end of this book, Percy isn't told this prophecy, and we don't know what it is either, but the full prophecy is revealed to him and to us at the end, so I'm going to go ahead and read that for you. Now, this is the great prophecy, and here's what it says. It says, "A half-blood of the eldest gods shall reach 16 against all odds, and see the world in endless sleep. The hero's soul, cursed blade, shall reap. A single choice shall end his days, Olympus to preserve or raise." I'm going to go ahead and break that down for you a little bit. So, half-blood of the eldest gods, that's pretty straightforward. That means a child of the big three, which are Poseidon, Zeus, and Hades. Now, until this point in the story, the only child of the big three was Percy, which is why it's such a big deal that Talia has miraculously been healed and saved by the fleece. Now, shall reach 16 against all odds, that's pretty straightforward, just means they won't die and won't get hunted down by monsters or anything like that and defeated, and see the world in endless sleep. So we don't know what that means quite yet, but we'll come to see that later on. The hero's soul, cursed blade, shall reap, which means that someone is going to die, and the line after that reinforces this, a single choice shall end his days. So that's just further solidifies, as I said, that somebody is going to die in the fulfillment of this prophecy. And the final line, Olympus to preserve or raise. So either they're going to save it or utterly destroy Olympus and the gods and all of it. And that's the prophecy. So that's the end of the story. That's where this one ends. And it'll get picked up later on. But enough with that. We're going to transition now into the review for this book. Now, I really enjoyed this book, even though at the very least, this has to be my sixth time reading it. Now, the story is amazing. It does a great job of setting the stakes higher than before and keeping it interesting. Rick Riordan does an excellent job at maintaining the continuity, such as the reappearance of Luke and his betrayal to serve Kronos is more fleshed out and explained. I think that the reveal of the great prophecy to Percy and to us the reader is a really nice touch for adding an extra flair of drama and of mystery to this series. Also, I really liked the idea that the Bermuda Triangle and all the myths and legends and conspiracies surrounding it are simply the mortals' understanding of the Sea of Monsters and how they see it through the mist, which is the magical veil that helps separate the two worlds and keep the mortals from figuring out everything that's going on around them all the time. Now, the different action sequences that Riordan writes into this book, such as the battle with the dodgeball playing giants and the chariot races, are very well written and are exciting and a lot of fun to read, so I appreciate that. Also, as with the Lightning Thief, he throws a plot twist at the end that keeps you hooked and makes you want to come back for the sequel when it's released. Now, at this point in time, it clearly has already been, as these books are several years old, but it makes you hooked and makes you want to read that book right away. Now, the addition of Talia to the cast of characters and the implications she has in the prophecy, as we learned as the child of Zeus, is pretty great and adds yet another twist that makes the story more and more interesting. It continues just to weave this web and flesh out everything for an amazing storyline. We also see yet again how well Kronos has planned out his moves and how much he has been manipulating everything to try and achieve his will for the destruction of Olympus through this prophecy by poisoning the tree to have them retrieve the fleece to bring Talia into play. Now, overall, I give this book an 8 out of 10 for being a solid continuation of the wild world we discovered a love for in The Lightning Thief. Now, that's it for the review. Guys, I'd like to thank you for listening again. I've had a ton of fun making these past two episodes for the second season of my podcast. This season is titled Bookworm Corner. And the first season was called Guy with the Podcast and was reviews of various musicians and albums they released. I'd love it if you were to check out those episodes too. Also, there's an Instagram you can follow to stay up to date on what's happening and to contact me with suggestions or any comments you have on the podcast. That Instagram is studio_3532, which is also the name of the podcast as a whole. And I'd really appreciate it if you guys would go over and give that a follow. Make sure to turn on post notifications so you can keep on top of any updates that come out, as that's where I will be posting them, so you'll be the first to know if anything is happening. All right, guys, thanks.